Welcome to Dynamo's Dozen, podcast that I bring you each and every single week, where I will talk about whatever is on my mind, from pro wrestling, sports, entertainment, music, muesli, and movies, and I never forget the talc or the socks and the jocks. So this week on Dynamo's Dozen, we go back. We go way back. I'm here today with a man who was the first ever NWA Ireland Heavyweight Champion. He's held that title on two occasions. He's also a two-time NWA Ireland Tag Team Champion. And he's wrestled the best that Ireland has to offer, was trained by the best the world has to offer, and he is the master of the wrist lock. The man is none other than Adam Burke. So, Adam, how are you?
I'm good. I'm really, really good. Really, really good. Really busy.
Yeah.
But very, very excited to see what this podcast is all about.
Yeah.
I'm hearing good things.
Well, I'm here live in person for it. Back in my own...
Back in Bray.
Back in my own town, Bray. It's very nostalgic and very emotional for me. Now, just on the offset, I also forgot to mention here, you're now a man of comedy. One of the finest Irish comedians around, and you run a regular comedy night in Bray County, Wicklow, which where we are, called the Hardy Hare.
Correct.
Which it seems to grow on a monthly basis. It's gaining more and more.
Well, it's grown. The brand is definitely growing in strength. It's now officially Ireland's longest running free admission club. So
awesome.
In that regard, free admission comedy can be a little bit frowned upon because it has a tendency to attract all sorts. You know, people who aren't actually out for comedy might amble or happen upon a free comedy night.
Yes.
But what we've done, I suppose, which is a little different in the Harbour Bar with Hardy Hare Comedy Club, is my return customers make up round about 90% of the audience every month. So we just have people who come out that are diehards, that come out to the show, and they know what it's all about. So it's a very, very well-established and kind of smooth-running free admission comedy club. So that's kind of what's different about it.
Cool. And it's the setting here for today's podcast is awesome. It's the wonderfully historic Harbour Bar, which I think, and it is historic because, I mean, there's some big names that have come here. I mean, Bono was a regular here, like, all throughout the 80s and 90s, I hear.
Yeah, Peter O'Toole. He donated one of the pieces that are on the wall when he was down in Ardmore Studios. I don't know, I think there was a famous writer lived locally, like James Joyce or somebody like that.
Okay.
Who might have lived across the way. But yeah, look, do you know what? You get all sorts in this place as well, and there's all sorts hanging out the wall and all. There's nothing like the Harbour Bar. A reason it was voted best bar in the world, and you only need to step foot inside the place. So that's why I feel very blessed to do comedy here every month, you know?
Yeah, and I'll have to get some pictures up for everyone to see after this podcast, exactly the kind of set it is.
Our Pope Wall, our Wall of Blasphemy behind you there. That's the backdrop for the Hardy Hare Comedy Club. We've got nothing but blasphemy on that wall. But do you know what? If you walk around the venue, you'll always find something new that you never knew was there before.
Well, I'm deeply offended because I'm very religious, as you may have heard on last week's podcast with Peter Farrell. We were talking about dragons and Mary and Mary and Jesus. So it was it's a wall of blasphemy behind me, people. It's great. I love it.
Yeah, and then across from you there, you have a big giant arse as well.
There's a lady.
There's a plaster cast of boobs behind me as well, like, so you never
we can see this. Actually, funny enough, that looks like if you're familiar with the film The Titanic, must have been another guy drawn
that
from
the
behind,
other side.
Was it?
Exactly, yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Good.
You might see what sank the Titanic now.
I think so, yeah. Well, it looks good, to be fair. I'm not going to complain. So let's get to business. I'll start at the beginning, Adam, and how I even know you. You got into pro wrestling a long time ago, 2002 to be precise.
Well,
how did
I didn't know that.
15 years, yeah.
Wow.
The first ever show was October 2002.
Was it?
Yeah.
Wow.
In Brennan. So 15 years ago we met, and you got it. How did you get into wrestling initially? How did that even come about for you?
As a kid I was into, you know, Hulk Hogan and Ultimate Warrior and all that kind of stuff. Bret Hart, I'd been out to see it a few times in the Point. I just grew up loving wrestling, just loved the whole showmanship of it. I suppose as I got closer to my teen years, I started kind of reading like World of Wrestling magazine and stuff like that, and I always remember seeing an article in one of the World of Wrestling magazines, and it was Johnny Moss, and it was him going to, I think it was Vegas.
Mm.
He was pointing to the big Vegas sign behind him, and it was a 2 or 3 page article, and he said, someday I'm going to go across to England.
Yeah.
And I'm going to learn how to wrestle. And I was walking down Vivi Road in Bray one afternoon, and my dad rang me, and he says, Adam, have you seen the Bray People? And I hadn't. And he said there was an article in it advertising a local wrestling school.
Yeah.
So I picked up the phone straight away. I believe I rang Fergal Devitt.
Mm-hmm.
And I had missed the first 2 training sessions before that ad went in. So I went down to the 3rd training session.
Yeah.
And I was there. I was hooked.
Yeah.
That was it. It was the beginning of a very, very nice journey, and one of the best experiences of my life.
Yeah, and you must have been, like, I mean, you were a kid then, like, obviously you were, like, 17,
yeah,
18.
Yeah, it would have been 17, I think, yeah. And, yeah, you know, I was still in school, and it was nothing that I expected or anticipated about pro wrestling. I got into pro wrestling to be a pro wrestler, but at the end of the journey, I had no aspirations to be a professional wrestler.
Yeah, yeah.
And I realized that I spent a lot of the last few years in it purely for the friendships that I had.
I got you. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it was like the love of actually doing it wasn't there as it was. It wasn't as much in you as it was when you started.
I learned very quickly that I wasn't the most technically gifted wrestler. I was never going to be doing moonsaults.
Okay.
I was never going to be doing flashy stuff. I was very protective of myself physically. I didn't like getting hurt.
Yeah.
And that is a big part of the business, is that you get hurt.
Yeah.
And, you know, I looked at the guys around me that were going places, and I could see that it was night and day in terms of their athleticism and the sacrifices they were prepared to make. And for me, I realized that I was increasingly doing more psychology stuff in the ring, and just being a showman and just being a full-blown bad guy and master of the wrist lock. Do you know what? That wrist lock thing, that was, again, it became a running joke in the place that I was just doing the wrist lock. And I remember doing it in a ladder match against Fingless Hooligans. At the top of a ladder, I did a feckin' wrist lock. Like.
Yeah.
But while I worked that in as a kind of a running joke, and that actually what I was doing there was I was protecting myself and doing the minimum amount I had to do physically to try and get the maximum kind of, you know, output, or, you know, hook people in as best I could using what I felt were my attributes, and that was just character and the gift of the gab and just being an asshole.
Yeah.
But those last 2 years, I would say that it was the people around me. I always thought I'd get into wrestling to be a wrestler. I never thought I would get into wrestling to meet some of the best friends I ever had.
Yeah.
And that's what it became. It became a social club for me more
that
than because I knew the WWE never beckoned for me.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned there, like, you know, with the wrist lock and using kind of, that's what a lot of, I think, young kids nowadays don't get, is that you don't have to put your body through so much, you know, pain of the flips and the bumps and you can maximize your potential and your ability by doing very little.
Yeah.
But by developing your character and a psychology that the crowd can get involved in.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I'm not too versed now. Like, ultimately, when you step out of the wrestling world, you know, you can become very distant from it very quickly.
Okay, yeah.
Because, you know, I don't watch a lot of it on TV or whatever. I try and support the live shows when I can. But, you know, I think, and I could be wrong and I'm open to being corrected, but I think you're right in what you're saying. But there is, on that indie level, I think the guys that really stand out are the ones that are most athletically gifted.
Sure.
And then when you get up to the premium level of WWE, I think you can tone that back because you're having to work 5-6 nights a week. You know, they've a really heavy schedule of travel wrestle, and there's not much in between. So why would you be doing, you know, the really athletic stuff 5 nights a week? You know, you just won't have a longevity in the business, I would assume.
No,
you know what I mean?
That makes sense to me.
When I look at the OTT product here in Ireland, And that is the extent of my indie knowledge. But from going to a few of those guys' shows and from performing on some of their shows with them, I noticed that the guys that are brought in from Europe and America and that are really the marquee names and the you know, the heavy sellers, I found an awful lot of them to just be really athletic and technically gifted and all. So I'm sure they're excellent as well. I'm not saying that they can't work character. They are excellent characters and very engaging, and they do some very funny stuff and some very engaging kind of, you know, psychology in the ring. But ultimately, you know, I've gone and seen some of those main events where these guys are doing more flips and handstands and moonsaults and all. And, like, that is a mark of what wrestling is now, you know what I mean? Yeah. So I think there's just, you know, I don't think I would have ever got beyond that indie scene as a wrestler.
Okay.
Because I wouldn't have stood out enough. Okay. That's my, you know, and on top of that, like, you gotta have the physique as well. And, you know, again, I knew I wasn't willing to do what I needed to do to get the big man physique.
Well, I always thought you had a great look personally. You know what I mean? You've probably been a bit harsh on yourself, but I do see the points that you're making.
Yeah.
I do see that. You know, it's like that for a lot of us. Yeah,
I'm not knocking myself because I know at the time, I had a lot to offer for where wrestling was at that time in this country.
Exactly.
Yeah. I knew I played a part. Yeah. I could play a role and, you know, as important a role as many of the other people that were involved in the company. So I don't think by any means I was, you know, the front runner. Likewise, I don't think I was holding people back.
Mm.
But right now, you know, when I look at it, I think I made the right decision. I don't think, looking at some of the guys who have done well out of our company, I don't think I would have reached that level. And I think that's a fair assessment.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. I mean, when you look at guys like Jordan and Fergal and, you
Becky.
Know, even Max or Becky, to name a few. I mean, that was just pure and utter eat, sleep, drink, live wrestling. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, and Paul Tracy as well. I mean, he's still going around as well.
Yeah, one of my best buddies. Yeah. And, you know, I work with Paul.
Yeah.
And I see Paul 5 days a week. And we chat all the time, and I know the level of work that he puts into it. And, you know, he still, you know, works as well. You know, I don't know whether Paul considers wrestling a hobby or, you know what I mean?
I know.
Because he is a little bit, you know, more advanced than a hobby wrestler, a part-time wrestler.
Yeah, I would agree.
He has this wealth of knowledge, and he's a very, very good coach, and he's very seasoned and well-traveled, and he's in the know. But at the same token, do you know what I mean? I see all the work that he puts into it, and I just knew that I wouldn't put the same in.
Yeah, and that's fair enough. Yeah. Like, you know, if you have that kind of talk with yourself and you know, it's like a crossroads.
I had a very serious chat with my wife, my now wife, but she was my then girlfriend.
Yeah.
When the transition happened. So that's when Paul and Fergal left what was NWA Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we were invited to take over the company under a new name. You know, it was only, that was only a matter of weeks that had all come to pass. And I sat down with my wife and we had a very kind of, very real conversation.
Okay.
And it was about my place in wrestling and how far I wanted to pursue it. And then also other ambitions that I had in my personal life, and I'm very proud that all my kids were planned. You know, none of them are accidents.
I like this.
So I said to my wife, I was like, I want to get married. I want to have kids.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to get my own home. I, you know, there was a lot of things that I wanted, and
real ambitions. Yeah,
And I wanted kids more than she did. Okay. And she said, well, are you going to be able to do that if you're going to England or Japan or America pursuing this?
Yeah.
And the answer was no. So then after a real kind of, you know, again, an awful lot of reflection, you know, I realized as well that I also didn't want to be I got into wrestling to be a wrestler.
Yeah.
And then I realized, you know what? I don't think I want to be a coach. I don't think I want to be a promoter. I don't think I want the overheads of managing rent and managing people's expectations and managing a whole, it became a whole new group of people.
Yeah.
You know, the old NWA heads, dispersed, yeah. And then a new school where it was trying to attract a new,
yeah, of
a course. New generation, if yeah. you like. And yeah. I was just kind of like
running the business, basically, almost.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I stayed in the beginning to try and keep friendships alive.
Yeah. Yeah.
And but do you know what? I think some of them were strained or tested because do you know what? You know, it's like Spider-Man. With great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah.
And when you step in to somebody's position who was very used to doing things one particular way before you, and you make any sort of a change, change is always met with resistance. Yeah. That's a fact of life. That's not wrestling.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
life. Yeah. When change comes into your life, your first instinct is to resist it.
Yes.
Because, you know, we thrive around familiarity, if you like.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're going to upset people. Do you know what I mean? You're going to do things different. You're going to do them the wrong way. And again, on that reflection and just looking at the people around me, I was like, I don't want to upset any of these people yeah. because I liked yeah. everyone around me. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Of course.
So that was my big excuse to step out. And then I stepped into... Yeah. The crazy world of comedy.
I like that kind of, you know, that explanation you gave, because it's not too dissimilar to, like, a football manager or coach. You know, when a new football manager comes in and brings new training regimes in,
yeah.
and you've got players resisting, yeah. i.e. Chelsea and Mourinho kind of thing, you know what I mean? Just as an example.
And what do football clubs do if the shit hits the fan? Yeah. They always sack the manager.
Exactly.
So you don't want to get into a position where there's nobody going to be sacking you if you're a promoter of a wrestling yeah. school, gym, you know, promotion, whatever way you put it. Nobody's going to be sacking you. No. So what happens if the manager or if the guy running it can't be sacked, or the guys running it can't be sacked?
Yeah.
The resistance will come from the people around them. You don't want to breed an exactly. animosity. So yeah. if for the sakes of friendships and mm-hmm. for the sakes of being a very, very selfish person, because I can be, when I want like something, when I want something, I'm going to do it. Yeah. I had to part ways. So I've no regrets in that sense. As long as I didn't lose the friends along the
way. No, I don't think so. I mean, you're still spoken very highly of. What I would say as well, in terms of on the good times of your time in wrestling, you had the honour of being crowned the first ever NWA Ireland champion. That describe that experience.
Really, really surreal, because there were far more talented people than me in the company. I think... a little bit of it was circumstantial. I think the title always would have come to me because I was a company guy. And, you know, I wasn't afraid to fly the NWA Ireland flag. We came at a period in time where the Monday Night Wars were relevant. So we always saw the competition as exactly that competition. If you weren't with us, you were against us.
Yep.
I was the NWA. I will fly this flag. I will die for the flag. I will die for my brothers in arms. That kind of silly. We look back on it now and we laugh because it was a silly kind of mentality. But it was the mentality that we were raised on. This is the wrestling we knew.
Yeah.
So I think at some stage they would have given me the belt. If I'm being completely transparent with you and completely honest with you, I would think that I think, in my opinion, Paddy Morrow remains the most naturally gifted and best worker in the country. I think he should have got the title to begin with in some regards.
Mm-hmm.
I always knew he was going to get the strap. It was a no-brainer.
Yeah.
But maybe, you know, it might have been as simple as, you know, I was already booked to go on a tour in England with Team Mega and with one of the guys out the Regulators, Kenna. We were already booked to go to England. So even in hindsight, when I think of getting the strap, I wondered, is it because I was just, I was available to tour straight away? Or did they ask me to tour because they knew they were putting the strap on me? Yeah. And that is something I've never asked that of Paul or Fergal.
Well, it's out there now.
Yeah, yeah. But I always wonder that. So it could have been circumstantial. But to answer your original question, I stood in the ring with Justin Shape beside me, one of the guys I respect most in Irish wrestling.
Yeah, he was on last week. Yeah.
Just a lovely, lovely guy. Yeah. And we had been rolling a bit before the show started in Wolf Town. We were doing a little bit for some American crowd that were in doing photos and videos and shit. And we were just, you know, we were doing a bit of wrestling and all. Paul and Fergal slid into the ring, gathered everybody around. Me and Justy were in the ring because we'd just been rolling and told to stay where we were. And Paul just started doing a read-through of the show, put his arms around me, or his arm around my shoulders, and just said the word champion. And I dropped to my knees. Yeah. And I am fully aware that, you know, in hindsight, again, we were a small company, we were small fish in a very, very big pond and all,
yeah.
But it meant the world to me because if nothing else, if the talent wasn't there, if my personality rubbed certain people up the wrong way, or if I didn't do everything the exact perfect way or anything, the one thing I can say, like so many of the lads there, I turned up to training every week.
Yeah.
Every week.
Yeah.
I built the ring. When the ring needed to be built every week. Justy was the man under the stage in Brendan's firing the bars out, and we were putting the bars across building this big contraption and all. You know what I mean? I got training early. I left training late. You set up for shows. You cleaned up after shows. You flew the flag. You fought the fights online, which was just the most unprofessional thing as well. Like, but you did all this stuff because you just... you loved what we were trying to achieve. So to have those two guys put a strap around my waist was, for me, a huge deal at the time. But you know what? I carried it as a huge deal. I don't think I was ever cocky about having the belt.
No.
But when I had the belt, I really showed it off. I really told people, this is amazing. Like, I can't believe this. And I grafted hard then to, you know, the minute I was disappointed. I know, obviously, wrestling's a total work, and it's, I mean? But the minute that bell came off me, I knew in my mind, very, very clearly, why it was coming off me. It made perfect sense for it to come off me.
Yeah.
But you're still disappointed.
Oh, yeah, of course. You still want to be the champ. In a selfish way, of course.
You still want to be the champ.
But you definitely, you did, you carried yourself like a champ. I mean, I was out of the wrestling at that time, I think that was when I was injured, but I did see you, I was there, I felt very proud for you as well because, I mean, we all started together and you know, from a little school in Andrews, as you said, to getting shows regular enough, I suppose.
Yeah.
And then having our own belt.
Yeah, you know? It was amazing.
It was basically them saying, right, you're the guy.
Yeah.
You're the guy that's going to be the face of this company while you're holding the strap. So well, it does mean something. You what?
Well, the heel. I was the heel of the company.
The heel of the company.
But it made sense as well for Paddy, who was a huge baby face. Like, such a good worker.
And by the way, in my opinion, and I mean this, I think Paddy Morrow is actually the best wrestler in the world that I've ever seen.
He's
I've ever seen.
And do you know what? Paddy's a gent as well. Like, I always socialised with him. We'd go down to the back bar on a Saturday night. Like, Jesus, some of the stories I could tell you about Paddy down there. He's one of the funniest, naturally funniest guys I've ever met. He's super sound to me. Like, I've always had a great relationship with the guy. But do you know what? Beyond all that, beyond him being a top bloke, my God, when you wrestled him, like... I never feared anything wrestling Paddy.
No.
You know what I mean? I never feared getting hurt. Yeah. I never feared missing a spot. I never feared not getting heat. I never feared that we wouldn't take it home the right way going over. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. And, you know, I like to think that I also caught him at all the appropriate times.
Yes.
That was my role in it.
Yeah.
Paddy jumped and I caught him. And I made sure that when he landed... he landed safely. And beyond that, Paddy made me and every person he stepped into the ring with look like a superstar.
Absolutely.
And that's why he's the best worker in the country.
Couldn't agree more. And I say the world purely because I believe, you know, he's the one that could have really been a huge star.
Yeah.
He could wrestle any style.
Yeah,
he could wrestle anyone.
He's
called a suicide machine, but you just mentioned about being safe. Like, he was literally
safe
machine. That's what he should be.
Absolutely.
Like, you know,
no, he was solid. And do you know what? You could speculate and you could talk about timing.
Oh yeah,
physique and all, and say why you know, why didn't he reach the top? Do you know what?
Doesn't
need to reach the top. He only needs to look at the back catalogue of matches he's had. I would rather work with a guy who can bring WrestleMania to a crowd of 80 people in Wolf Tone than see a guy on WrestleMania, you know what I mean, being watered down, not being allowed to be the star of the show, following a script. This guy works off script and makes it look like he has done it every day of the week for the last 20 years.
Yeah. And as Phil the Trill says, just a quick shout out to our hometown again, because it really was the Madison Square Garden of Irish wrestling, was it? Wolf Tone.
Absolutely.
Didn't matter if it was only 80 people.
No.
The atmosphere in that building when a show was on was just incredible. The feeling backstage.
There was no scene. There was us and there was Irish Whip. and there was no scene, and we were building a scene, and we were getting people,
yeah,
I don't know, interested in something we were doing that was a little different. We were bringing it to communities, local communities, when they'd never seen it before and had no access to it. And that was our home. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. That was our home venue. Yeah. Great stories from Wolftown.
I got to ask you one question just off. It just came to my head when you mentioned it there. Didn't even have this written down. But it's very funny, and it's something I brought to you a few years back.
Right.
I remember I came across a DVD when I saw the time that Adam Abbs and Paddy Morrow showed up to Irish Whip Wrestling.
Oh,
and David Zero, the ladies hero. Yeah. A man that,
On that occasion, we blurred the line between what was real and what was fake. We got people asking questions. Everything was to create something that hadn't happened in Irish wrestling yet. And that was, at that time, we were losing a bit of the realism, and there was an awful lot of politics going on, and, you know, people kind of biting at each other online and all.
Yeah.
And it was just one of those opportunities that popped up where everybody got worked. Yeah. Everybody got worked.
Yeah.
You know, it remains one of those infamous stories.
Yeah.
But my recollection of it was there was an opportunity there to go over.
Yeah.
And there was an opportunity to make a you know, trans promotional piece.
Yeah.
My feeling was I would have liked to have wrestled or fought Sheamus. That's what I wanted.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah,
that's what I wanted.
That would have made sense.
And I was given Dave Zero. I have spoken to Dave Zero since that. Mm-hmm. And when I became a booker after Paul and Fergal left, I tried to reignite that angle and use it again and work him again. And it didn't come to pass the way I would have liked.
Yeah.
But in terms of how that panned out, look, it was, I can't say that was, and I'm not working you here when
No.
I had limited information about what my role on that show was going to be.
Okay.
But I went in with the attitude of, I'm an NWA Ireland head, I've come through the school, and I will shoot anybody if I need to shoot, but I'm going in to wrestle if I need to wrestle.
Yeah.
I turned up to the show. I believe that it turned into a shoot very quickly, but I didn't need to do a hell of a lot to
how did that come about? Like,
there was no you know, sitting down before the match and let's work out.
Okay.
We were gonna work that on the fly.
Yeah, because that's what we did in NWA.
So there was no, I didn't sit down with Dave and go, we're gonna do X, Y, and Z, and here's the script. There was none of that. We turned up
toast,
in a Jeep.
Toast, that's what he called you. Toast.
We turned up in a Jeep. Yeah, we jumped out of the back of the Jeep and walked into their Gym Wars show, and they did a promo and all the rest, and there was no sitting down and planning out a match or whatever, but I still thought this is all a work. There's not going to be a shoot here. Nobody's going to fly into this ring and shoot on me. But when we got down to business in the ring, like, I do believe that Dave did try and.
And what was it exactly?
Try and hold his own.
What did he
try and hold his own? Okay. I don't think, like, you know, I in terms of, you know, movement around the ring, I tried to shoot Dave off, or I tried to, you know, I believe I was, he acted like a sack of spuds, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like he went kind of limp, if you like.
Oh yeah, I saw.
So, you know, it just became uncomfortable to kind of work him safely in the ring. I remember throwing him to the outside of the ring. I remember he got a bit of a stiff kick off Paddy outside the ring. And when he got back into the ring, a couple of moves later, he started vomiting in the ring. I was concerned for the guy.
Of course,
We took a home as quick as we could. We bailed out of there. We checked in to make sure that the guy was okay. I am equally confused as other people as to what happened. And it's such a long time ago. But that's my best recollection of it.
Okay.
If the question was, do I have any feelings about Dave Zero? No, none. Mm-hmm. Is he a nice guy? I don't know. I don't really know him, but I have spoken to him since. I tried to involve him in a future storyline and all, and he was on board for a bit of it, but then I think it didn't work out for him to continue.
Mm.
Do I have any animosity towards him? No. Do I have any animosity towards Irish Whip? No.
No.
Do I have any animosity towards Sheamus? No, it just...
It was at that time. It's in the past, yeah.
And I just went with the flow. Yeah. Is that the easiest way for me to say it?
That makes sense.
I was just like, yeah. You know, there was all this online stuff, yeah. And then there was all this, and they're like, we might be able to work this as an angle. Do you want to be... I was just like, yeah, let's just fucking do it. Let's go. And I just felt confident that I'd be able to take care of myself if I needed to.
Yeah.
And just in terms of the working of the match, I'd need to see it back. Yeah. But my recollection
I'd
of
I'd love
it
to
is,
know if anyone out there has it.
Please. But nobody came in from the outside, so the locker room behaved themselves.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody, you know, started... honest from the locker room or anything like that, so it was just a weird fucking thing, you know.
That's what I got from it, because I mean, I already seen the tape, and that's what I got from it, that it was just weird. No, I just thought I'd bring it up. And then,
but do you know what? It achieved its objective,
yeah.
Got exactly. People talking
and
about
they questioned it.
They questioned it, blurred the lines, which was always the case,
yeah.
You know, there were stiff shots in that. Dave landed a punch on me,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Stiff punch,
yeah.
So, fair play to him,
yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? We'll take that.
It's only because you let him.
Yeah, no, but do you know what? That's what wrestling was about. Create a buzz that wasn't there. That's what you're meant to be doing in every match, let alone every promotion and every show you do. Every match you're meant to be creating a buzz. I don't understand guys who go out and think that the weight of their name is enough to create the buzz. Mm. No. Unless you're at fucking WrestleMania.
Yeah, yeah.
No. Exactly, if you're working the indie scene, your name is not enough. Your gimmick is not enough. The things you've done in the past is not enough. You need to create a buzz around that match for that audience with that opponent. And, you know, you can't be thinking any other way. And that's coming from a guy who's a decade out of the fucking business.
Yeah, no, that makes all the sense in the world to me. And just so we know, we're not beating up on Dave Zero, because I actually met him. I had something with him a while back, too. Yeah. A bit of a fallout.
I don't even know his real name. And that's the truth.
Oh.
But
David Roach.
Yeah, that's it. I don't know the guy.
No, he's actually a nice guy. I saw him years later, and he's a nice guy.
When we worked the future angle that I booked.
Yeah, yeah.
So I put him over.
Oh yeah.
He did a run in, and I put him over. Yeah. I kept him. It actually resulted in a title switch with me and maybe Phil Boyd, I think it was at the time. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think we did a title switch
on
his involvement. So if ever you want, from a professional point of view, an indicator that there's no
animosity
lost or anything, I literally do not know the guy. But I tried to...
help him out. Well, just try to
reignite a bit of interest in that story. Because it just seems to crop up all the time. Well, but Paddy Morrow's to blame for that one. He threw the stiff kick. So you can ask, if you get Paddy on this podcast, ask him about that stiff kick.
I will.
That was not my doing.
I will. And listen,
Paddy has good kicks, man.
I felt them.
Nice stiff kicks.
Didn't get sick, but, you know.
Yeah, depends where he lands it.
They made us tougher out here, though.
Yeah. Listen, he used to land those kicks into my chest. You have a lot of meat in your chest. You don't have a lot of meat in your ribs, do you know?
Or in your liver.
But again, did he break anything? No.
No.
Did he put him in hospital? No. Did he injure him permanently?
No.
No, Paddy's safe.
No, he is. And I hope Dave's doing well. Shout out to Dave. So, just a quick one before we kind of get off the wrestling thing.
Yeah.
Just a couple of quick questions. You know, you did hold the title on two occasions. But one of the big things, I guess, for you, and something that I kind of always noticed from being around there, because I always just concentrated on the wrestling, you know.
Yeah.
Like a lot of us.
Yeah.
But you were really an innovator down there in the sense that you really focused on your gimmick and your character from day one.
Yeah.
In fact, Cerino was the first gimmick that you used.
Incidentally, the first promo I ever cut in front of a camera was as Adam Abs. And the name Adam Abs has nothing to do with your abs muscles.
No, no.
At the time, when you played Sega Mega Drive or whatever, you had three letters for high scores.
Oh, yeah.
My initials, Adam Burker, AB, and the default letter was Z. So that's where Abs came from.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So Adam Abs was the name I just made up on the fly.
I never knew that.
And we lined up in Andrew's school, and they brought in a camera, and about six or seven of us did promos,
and
I was the last guy.
Yeah.
I cut the last promo, and I cut it as Adam Abs. Then when it came to the show, I realized, what's the one thing that I don't have, or that I have that these guys don't have? And I said, there's no absurd character in this. There's nobody doing something over the top. I was like, so I'll do that. Yeah. You always find the thing that makes you different and stand out.
Yeah,
so I came up with this Cerino character, not different from Kane. You know what I mean? Not different from any of the monsters that have ever come through wrestling. A guy that wore kind of war paint, silly masks, ripped clothes, kind of hair all in bits and all. A true talcum people's eyes. Acted a bit off.
Never forget the talc.
And just pure energy, I went with. So, yeah, you're right. I did the first two or three shows of Cerino.
Yeah.
And then Fergal pulled me to one side and he said, why don't you do the Adam Abbs character? He goes, you don't need all that stuff. Yeah. Just do Adam Abbs. Just do you. Because I was doing just a similar character to Adam Abbs in every training session. I was just doing heel.
Yeah.
I was just doing cocky. Yeah. I was just doing promo.
Yeah.
So I dropped Cerino.
Yeah.
And I went with Adam Abbs.
I campaigned back then from Adam Abbs as well, I remember.
Right.
Because we used to have a couple of little training matches, and I used to say Adam Flabs and Joe
stuff
like that. But no, I was a big
fan
of that character.
Yeah, I got the t-shirt printed, and I got tights custom made and all. And yeah, you're right. I focused on character because I couldn't focus on moonsaults, because I couldn't do them.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And believe me, if I was capable of doing a moonsault and 360s, and you know, I can do a 619. I can still do a 619.
You can do a 619.
I can do a 619.
Okay, yeah.
But everything else I can't. So I went down the route of being the bad guy.
And a 619 is not to be shot at. I can't do a 619. I've never attempted it, but yeah. I'd probably break
it. I did that at the most recent show I've done. I do a couple of charity shows still.
Yes, yes.
And the most recent one I did, I hit a 619. It's not. It looks like an old man doing a 619.
But it doesn't matter. Your kids can say, I saw my dad do a 619. Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's it. That's enough for me. You know?
There's only one regret I have with yourself. We tagged one time. I remember Paddy Morrow pulled something out of the vault there recently enough where it just showed our entrance. And you had some nice flashy Hawaiian shirts
or something. On fire.
That was it. Right? That was it. Yeah. And the only regret I have from that, because it was actually a great match and all, I think that was the one before I got hurt and left for a while. But we used a Metallica entrance music.
Right.
And I was like, I want my entrance music because I didn't get it last night. Right. Something stupid and juvenile. But that entrance music you had was just unbelievable.
The electric.
I mean, I was like,
do you know he played the Harbour Bar here last
month? I saw that advertised.
He was here. What's his name? Valentine. Dick Valentine.
Yeah. Very, very funny.
Yeah,
band.
He was here last month. Fire in the Disco.
That was my regret that I didn't come out to that with you, because I would have loved to say I came out.
I just loved that song. It was, you know, there was nothing contrived about that. I genuinely loved that song at the time. It got me going. The first entrance music I ever used was Sunday Bloody Sunday by U2, because I'm a huge U2 fan.
Like myself. We're big marks for U2. Yeah.
So that was the first one I ever came out to, and it was Fergal's brother on the drums.
Yes.
But I ended up doing... Electric Six. People seemed to like it, and it gave me an energy in terms of, I used to get up on the ropes and do a little wiggle. Dance.
That's what I like.
I kind of do that.
I love that.
Yeah. But it was, the entrance was part of my shtick, if you like, when I was wrestling. But I have no regrets in terms of those kind of things. You know what I mean?
Well, that's what I was going to ask you.
I don't ever regret hurting somebody.
Yeah, and you never did.
No, I don't think I did.
No, you didn't.
Not that I know.
If there's someone out there that wants to...
Yeah, if they want to claim.
Fair enough, buddy. We're in the Hardy Hire at 11 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. We'll fix the claim for you.
All these solicitors onto me now.
But I suppose, ending the wrestling topic then.
Yeah.
Having looked back, and you've held it on two separate occasions, the title you, I mentioned as well, you held the tag team titles on three occasions as well.
Yes.
You did help in, like, you were a huge part in Irish wrestling getting off the ground, because it was Irish wrestling as a whole, not promotions bringing over superstars and claiming that they're an Irish wrestling company.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, fundamentally.
Yeah, I tried to give the guys a dig out.
Exactly. So how would you like to look back on your wrestling, your time in wrestling, and be remembered? Or remember yourself even?
Yeah. The titles and all mean nothing. You know what I mean? The titles mean nothing. It's the people that mean stuff. You know what I mean? So the friendships are important to me, and there's some guys I still keep in contact with. So from that point of view, that's all that's important. I did help coaching. When Paul and Fergal were there, I tried to take a bit of that strain off them, you know what I mean, and give a bit of a dig out. My dad ran a gym for years. I was always into fitness, so I'd do those little things, help new trainees if I had enough knowledge to help them and that. But, you know, ultimately, I always try to do the right thing at the right time for the right people. You know, reflecting back on it, like, you know, I look at situations where people might have thought maybe I pushed certain people because I liked them more. You know, obviously, I had family, you know, my brother-in-law was involved, his best mate was involved. And as soon as I started promoting or booking, I pushed them. But I pushed them because they turned up to training every week.
I got you.
Equally, Jordan Devlin, we have a running joke about how many gimmicks I put on that ladder.
Oh, yes.
Because I always try to find the thing. But, you see, we
you took my name for a while when I was away, too. Remember?
So, the reason, I think he changed, I think maybe he did Dynamite Devlin. Maybe it was something like
that. It was Dynamo Devlin. Was and it? Then I came back and I was like, ah, Dynamite Devlin. What's the story?
But we tried a load of things on him, and he always says, you know, that I did it to bully him and to, I was harsh on Jordan. Of all people, I was harsh on him. He said, you know, he often says that I tried to bury him with all these gimmicks, but if I'm being completely honest with you, I was doing quite the opposite. I was trying to find the one where we could, Jordan, you could see his talent then, and we wanted him on the shows, but you know what? He always looked like a kid.
Yeah.
Do you know? And I was finding that, but like, you know, there was people like Lee Flynn then as well, you know, who we tried to push into the Regency Society, and there was the two main lads in that, Mike Vega and Jack Hackenslash, Steve Elliott, like a comedian now himself.
Very funny man, anyway.
He's a great bloke, you know what I mean? And tried to give them a push. Southie at the time, we were trying to push him into, and then you're trying factions, and then you're trying to put this person, and you're trying to find all these solutions to each individual problem. And do you know what? You can kind of fall on that sword a little bit by trying to keep everybody happy. You end up making some people not happy. You can't push everybody all of the time. So my only regret in that regard is that I couldn't achieve the impossible. Couldn't
please everyone.
Couldn't please everybody. Yeah. And then, do you know what? Then you're, you know, I'm going to be completely honest with you. As soon as I was asked to take on a serious role in the company or start to lead, you know, you had to get strict with guys as well. And not the guys that were there from day one.
Mm-hmm.
But like with the new guys coming through, you had to be strict and you had to kind of say, no, actually, do you know what? You should have ring gear.
Yeah.
You should be looking after yourself. You should be in the gym. You should be doing X, Y, and Z. And do you know what? The minute you start telling people what they should do, they'll start hating you for it.
Yeah, that's
right. So that's only one piece of the jigsaw puzzle, but it's definitely one of the reasons why I said, do you know what? I don't need to be here. I'm gonna upset somebody.
On a quick one, I can't really complain too much about you, because when I did show up the few little times, you'd always put me on the show.
Yeah.
And like, I'd be training for like 2 hours and I was like, yeah, fine. And then some people got annoyed, but
you know, I never wanted to not book people.
No, exactly.
Do you know what I mean? Exactly. You want people to learn and you want people to grow, and nobody likes making the hard decisions. Yeah. But, you know, when there's change, people will either fight it. You hear that kind of expression, fight or flight.
Yep. Yep.
Right, you stand there and you take it on and you embrace the change and you work against it and you know, you take on that fight or you walk away. And it was selfish, but my response was that actually to walk away.
Yeah, and that's but that's fair enough. You made a personal decision. And look, to be fair, looking at it now, where Phil's brought it, like it's great to see it. You know,
it would have been a different animal if anyone else was doing it. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So you just don't know what way it's going to go. Yeah. And Phil took on that mantle and has had his journey and has brought it to where it is now as a school.
Yeah,
and that's his doing. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. But do you know what I mean? If we all had stayed involved, would it have got there? Would we have fallen out? Would there even be a school? All those questions, they're not questions that I even want to ponder. I don't want to know the answer to those. No. It's in a good place.
Yeah.
And it's in a good place because one guy took it on.
And never gave up.
And kept at it. Yeah. And if I'm being honest with you, I'm just reiterating a point. I actually didn't get into wrestling to be a coach or to be a promoter. I got in it to be a wrestler.
But that's fair enough.
So it was the natural end of the journey. It was horrible. I hated leaving.
Listen, but it's some people want to get into a band because they like being in a band. Not everyone wants to be a solo artist. Absolutely. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's just the way it is. Some people, I can see that point of view and respect it 100%. But let's leave wrestling for a while. Because that's all you ever get on this podcast is wrestling.
Yes.
We have had UFOs as well, though.
Right.
So there, you know, we've got a mix of everything.
Yeah.
But today, I'm going to bring comedy to the table because that's where you're at now, Adam.
That's where I'm at, yeah.
And how the hell did that all come about? Because you're always a funny guy anyway, but was it...
You're not going to like the answer. It came from wrestling.
Oh, there we go.
Ross Brown. Ross Brown was a wrestler at the time.
Yes.
And Ross Brown was dabbling in the comedy. Yeah. He had done a good few gigs. I think he was in it a couple of years at that stage.
Yeah.
He was doing a bit of writing, and in the gym one day I said to him, I was studying English in college, so I said, do you want me to just look over your scripts and literally fine tune them in terms of how they're formatted or not?
Yeah.
He said, yeah. I threw in a couple of ideas and a couple of gags, and he was like, do you want to do this as a regular thing? I was like, oh yeah, absolutely. So we were writing together, and then he said, if you want to be taken seriously as a writer, you got to perform. So he booked me my first gig. I started doing stand-up comedy to justify why I was writing comedy. And then I kind of toned down the writing script and just focused on the stand-up because I just really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It was another outlet to do live performance, sorry.
Yeah.
So that's, Ross gave me my in, and then being the kind of driven person that I am, I was kind of like, right, I'm going to have my own club, right, I'm going to do this, right, I'm going to start a festival, right, I'm going to do a tour or whatever it is.
You just
always try and build more and more. More and more. Make yourself busy and all, you know, so that's how it started.
And was there any particular, like, I suppose everyone growing up has like a couple of comedians that they see, you know, with their family or whatever. Was there any particular comedians that inspired you or that you liked or watched?
We grew up watching like the 9 o'clock news and Rowan Atkinson, Mr. Bean, Hale and Pace and Cannon and Ball and all of those. But in terms of stand-ups, Billy Connolly was the big stand-up.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? He was the big name.
He's the man.
Yeah, he really is. But if I'm being honest with you, I would have taken comedies with a pinch of salt.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed comedies, and I'd sit down and watch funny shows.
Faulty Towers.
100%. Father Ted. All those. Yeah. But when you become a comedian, you look at things a completely different way.
Okay. Because
you're looking from a performer's point of view. So I almost had a renaissance in my thinking around comedy. And you revisit all those things. But, you know, I only learned about... I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, it was Bill Hicks. Bill Hicks or George Carlin.
Yes.
That was the guy. You know, the gritty guy was the one that got me in there.
Mm.
Rowan Atkinson was the classic clown that made me laugh, you know
what
I mean?
Yeah.
But you develop an appreciation as a performer for what people, you know, are capable of doing and where they're capable of bringing the art. And, yeah, you know, Hicks and Carlin and that, like, they're ones I learned about retrospectively. Dave Allen, learned about him retrospectively.
Yeah.
And they're absolute forces. Now, at this point in time, Dara O'Brien for me is one of my favourite
fellow Bray man again.
I'm going to see him tomorrow night.
Yeah,
I've been to see him live before. I've met the man here in this venue.
He is a Bray man, isn't he?
He's a Bray man. This is his local.
Well,
he comes for his Christmas pint here every year.
Awesome.
So I chatted to him 2 years ago here. He knows that, you know, I kind of hold him in very high esteem. He knows it's a long term ambition of mine to get him to have a homecoming gig in Bray, you know what I mean?
Awesome.
And he knows what we do here and all. But, you know, you got to look at the people around you and, you know, not only enjoy what they're doing, but say to yourself, why do I enjoy what they're doing?
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And he just hits the nail on the head about some of the things Dara O'Brien covers, like, for me, is just, like, he does a great piece around music snobbery that he literally pulled the feeling right from my chest, like that is something that's deep seated in me.
Tell me about that.
I'm not going to be able to do his bit verbatim, but he does a bit about music snobbery and how he doesn't understand how people can be music snobs. And he's like, he says something along the lines of, "Oh, you don't like you like those sounds? Oh no, they're the wrong sounds. These are the sounds you should like. These are much better sounds."
Yeah.
And when he puts it that way, you're like, absolutely. Yeah. People, you know, my wife has always been into pop music and always got torture for liking pop music.
Yeah, yeah.
But who's anyone to tell her
that you're wrong?
That she's wrong to like what she likes. Yeah. And he hit that, and then he does another fantastic piece about him trying to play like a video game with guns and all for the first time, and how he got kind of stuck in a corner. And it's a physical play out. You got to see this. But it's about him not being able to move the character. And the way he moves on stage is exactly what I see on screen when I try and play video games. I'm useless at them.
Yeah.
And same with me. It's capturing stuff that people don't think to say, but they think. They're thinking it anyway.
Yeah. But when you say that's
the key to good comedy. When you say something that people are thinking but have never put into words, and when their gut reaction to that, to you putting it in words, it's just this belly laugh because they're like, oh, that's me.
That's it, yeah.
That's comedy. That's,
and everybody has had that situation where they'd like sit watching a comedian like Eddie Murphy or Billy Connolly or something.
Yeah.
And you hear, and you go, that's actually, So I 100% get the point you're making, yeah. That's awesome. And Dara O'Brien is actually hilarious.
Yeah, he's great. He's very, very funny.
And doesn't need to use any profanity or anything to get himself over. Yeah. And comedy seems to be quite big in Ireland right about now. Comedy seems to be quite big in Ireland now. Has that always been the case? Has it always been as big as it is, or is it?
No, I would say that the scene is kind of bustling at the moment. Yeah. You know, the longest running comedy club in the country is the International, the Comedy Cellar, in the International.
Okay.
I think that's running maybe 16, 17 years. So the guys that kind of set that up, you know, at that time, there was four or five of them that were just looking for a regular outlet for them to perform. So that is the length and breadth of it. That's how it kind of all started.
Okay.
In terms of now, you as an Irish comedian, you can get a gig in this country any night of the week. Yeah. The International actually runs 7 nights a week.
Really?
But on top of that, I could think of venues that are running on alternative nights in Dublin. Pretty much for all 7 nights that don't include the International. There are people that are doing it. You know, you can go and gig on a Monday, on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
But the only problem is there's about 300 people all looking for the same gigs. So you got to be good.
Yeah.
I would say that the scene at the moment is bustling.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the internet and all plays a big part in that because, you know, you have a limited amount of stage time, but you have an exponential amount of time that you can be active online. So you can be a comedian who only does 2 or 3 gigs a week, but you can have this amazing presence online where you're churning out content.
Yeah.
You know, writing jokes, putting up little kind of picture memes and creating little videos and all. It's not stand-up comedy, but it is comedy.
Yeah.
And you build your audience that way. So you get a lot of people who are building themselves as a brand, and there's a lot of brands out there, and that creates a great hustle and bustle on the scene, and it makes it very marketable.
That's cool. It's good to see, kind of, because as you said, there is kind of, and I'm sure you've had this experience. I remember my first gig I saw you in was the Bankers Club, actually, with some of the boys. That's going back.
That would have been one of my first gigs.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was one of your first gigs, but it was awesome.
Yeah.
But have you, you kind of touched, I think you were touching on this at the start.
Yeah.
With the drunk lager lout who goes out just to fuck someone's set up for the sake of it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Or to hopefully get called out on it. You know what I mean? Does that still go on?
I like them.
You do? Because you're quite well-read.
They're my bread and butter. You know, you will never be funnier than the guy with the microphone.
Yeah.
That everybody has paid to see.
Yeah.
You will always be the asshole who's had too much to drink.
Yeah.
And the comedian will always have the experience over you. They have dealt with assholes like you all the time.
Yeah.
Whereas you're just being an asshole in front of a comedian for your first or second time.
Yeah.
They will always get the upper hand. Now, there's a couple of comedians, you know, musical acts or ones who do a very, you know, toned down set and they're, you know what I mean, that won't be able to engage with that stuff. So that's why I like emceeing.
Yeah.
I tell people, chat to me, heckle me, have the crack with me, and then respect the other comedians. Because some people just need that outlet. And they're not to be judged.
No.
If you are an asshole who likes to go out and, you know, get involved in that way, you know, it's not ideal for the comedians. It's not ideal for all the other punters. It's not ideal for the club.
Mm.
But ultimately, you know, it's still your bag. It's still, I don't think they're entitled to do it, but they do it, and it's a fact of life. You will always have them.
But nobody likes them. Nobody likes them.
No, not in the audience, they don't. No. But the way I see it is, like, I have to accept that they're just the same as a broken microphone or a spilled drink or an ambulance passing the venue outside in the middle of your best punchline. It's a problem to just be dealt with.
Mm.
And do you know what? You can turn it around and make it a very funny problem to be dealt with. I will give hecklers torture.
Oh, I can imagine.
If they put themselves out there, that becomes their problem and their fault.
Yeah.
There's no holds barred with a heckler.
Yeah.
If I instigate an interaction and the person says something funnier than me, I will applaud them. If I say, hey, you know, I'm glad to see you wore your sister's blouse to the show tonight because some fella has a snazzy shirt on.
Yeah.
And then he hits me back with something 10 times more original and more funny and something that people haven't heard before. If he genuinely makes the room laugh and makes me laugh, I instigated that conversation. I applaud him for making the most of it.
Yeah, yeah.
But if somebody comes in and just goes, you're a shit, or shouts at one of the comedians or whatever, then I'm like, man, I am going to make your children embarrassed that you exist. Do you know what I mean? I just got to, yeah.
And he says this with a look of such conviction here, people. Yeah. So just don't heckle Adam Abbs. Or Adam Burke, should I say. Or anybody else for that matter.
Yeah, yeah.
Just don't do it.
Yeah.
A quick one. I went to a recent thing in the... where was it? Sorry, Vicar Street.
Yeah.
It was a spoken word thing with Chris Jericho. Yeah. And my God, is he able for hecklers.
Ah, yeah.
Because it was like a comedian thing.
Yeah.
And some guy got thrown out. And everyone starts singing that stupid song. Na, 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 hey, hey. And they were doing it for about 5 minutes. And he goes, guys, you paid like 50 bucks to come here. Are you just going to watch the asshole getting kicked out, or do you want to watch me?
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? So I'd see your point. Like you can almost, rather than getting angry about it, you can probably make it good for you.
Yeah, I know what I mean? Every negative situation can be turned into a positive situation for a comedian. You got to go with the flow. There's no point in you doing stand-up comedy if you can't kind of do things off the fly and make the most of the situation you're in. Because some people like that kind of raw end of comedy as well. You know what I mean? Yeah. Some people like the unique experience. You know, if you buy a DVD, you're just seeing the same jokes told the same way. Or if you watch a Netflix special, you're just seeing the jokes.
Yeah.
But a lot of people go for that, you know, live kind of anything can happen.
Yeah.
Kind of vibe, you know what I mean? So you got to give them that.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And you've been running the Hardy Hair now for over 7 years, is it?
It's actually, we are in October.
Yeah.
So we are officially now going into our 10th year. October will be 10 years. Okay. I actually miscalculated that myself. I put up a post maybe 2 or 3 years ago saying this is our 5th anniversary show.
Yeah.
It wasn't our 5th anniversary show at all. We started in 2008.
Wow.
So if we're going into we started in October 2008. So if we go into October 2018, that'll be the 10th anniversary show. So we're going to do a year of top-notch shows, you know, counting down our 10th anniversary. That's the plan of action.
That's awesome, man. There was me thinking that I had the accurate information.
Well, listen, so did I. That's how kind of out of the loop I was. I just don't track the time on
it. Yeah, of course.
I do know it was October 2008 we started, so we will do something for the next year to kind of count down the big 10th anniversary show.
So it's your baby, like, and your role here is you're basically the MC.
The promoter, booker, and I'm the resident host. Yeah.
Awesome. And how, like, you know, you mentioned them earlier, you run it once a month, yeah?
Yeah, once a month. Sometimes if we have to, we'll do 2 shows. If an opportunity comes up to bring in a comedian from the UK or whatever, we'll do 2 shows. Every January, then, we run it weekly because we do a big, the Best New Act competition to find the best new act in the country. Awesome. And then every February, we do the Comedy Festival.
I have some time off in February and January, too.
Well, we've got some big shows coming in February. So
awesome. Is there anything you can say now?
I suppose so. Steve Frost's Improv Comedy All-Stars, you'll have seen Steve Frost on Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Yes.
So we're bringing improv to the festival for the first time ever.
Awesome.
So it is like Whose Line Is It Anyway live. That's going to be happening in the festival. I can't give you an exclusive in terms of who the big Irish act is, But let me say that it will be more than one person. It will be the first time that they've ever performed in Bray. And it'll be one night only. And I guarantee you that the tickets will sell out 2 days tops.
Well, you better let me know beforehand.
So, yeah. Huge. Like, I mean, in terms of Irish acts, like, you know, I would say on the same kind of level as your Tommy Tiernan's and Darrell Breen's.
My favourite is actually Dylan Moran.
Love Dylan Moran. I went to see him in Vicar Street as well. Dylan's absolutely fantastic. Yeah. A great, great act. But, you know, this festival has to grow every year. It has to get bigger and better. If it doesn't, then I'm not motivated. So,
I
motivate myself very highly, and I owe a debt of gratitude to Kevin Healy, who runs the Comedy Carnival in Galway.
Yeah.
Because he has been a little bit of a mentor for me, and he's helped me kind of secure some acts, and he's just so well-versed in promoting comedy. He's the biggest promoter in the country.
Yeah.
But I've got a good kind of working relationship with him. He's a super nice guy. I did my first carnival last year with him as well. He's just really top notch bloke, and he's just helping me kind of lift the level. But we did really well last year. We'd PJ Gallagher, we'd Dave McSavage, we'd Al Porter, we'd Waterford Whispers News, we'd Paul Cinna off The Chase, the Cinnerman. You know, we had great shows. All the guys from Father Ted were here. Like, it's for a small festival, it's a big festival.
Definitely,
it's a big,
and
small
Bray
festival.
Bray is a town that people want to come to. Do you know what I mean? People can say what they want about Bray, but it's a great town. Like, even I came out here very, very little nowadays, but it's just every time I come out, there's something new. There's a buzz.
I torture Bray all the time when I do stand up. I always slag Bray off because it's where I'm from.
It's your
and
town.
I slag Greystones because they're the Protestant version of Bray. But, like, they're my running jokes. But I actually, listen. Here's an exclusive for you, because you won't hear me saying this anywhere else.
Okay.
I love Bray. Yeah. I love Greystones. I love all the communities that are around this little area.
Yeah.
I wouldn't promote what I promote, a club or a festival. I wouldn't promote them in this area if I didn't love the people, the places, the vibe, everything. I'm a very, very proud Bray man, but I'll never say that on stage.
Yeah, well,
you gotta pick the little holes. That's the fun of being a stand-up.
I'll write this down 60 minutes into a podcast. If you want to hear those words again, you'll never hear
them
again.
That's the only time you'll hear them. You know?
Do you know what? It's funny. I used to torture Bray when I lived here too.
Yeah.
And the fact that when I moved out of it, it's actually when you get out of it, you realize, wow, I miss my town.
We've got that seafront on our doorstep.
Yeah.
We've got the big and little Sugarloaf, you know. Yeah. You've got all the little woods. You've got Cloudery Gardens, Bray Head. You've got the Protestant Swans in the harbour. Like, there's all these different things.
You've got the Harbour Bar.
You've got the Harbour.
The Hardy Har.
Yeah, absolutely.
Garden Burke, you've got all sorts of... You've got Paul Tracy, you've got Dermot O'Brien, you've got all the best youth workers in Bray as well.
We've got the best of everything, except King Edward Road. I don't like King Edward Road. They've just got up themselves, you know what I mean? They've gotten... They take life too seriously.
They've changed.
They've too much money. They own everything. They have monopolised this town. So every now and again, I don't have a dog, but every now and again, I like to steal a dog and let it shit on King Edward Road.
All right.
And then I let it free, and then it's found 3 days later on Bray Open Form.
Well, I tell you what, when I'm back out here at night, I'm going to pee on King Edward Road.
On King Edward
I'm just going to do it, you know.
I'm sure they have private butlers to clean it all up.
Well, probably. It might be caviar. It might be something.
A delicacy.
A delicacy for those people, you know? I was going to ask you some of the big names that you've had perform here, but you've kind of mentioned a lot of them already.
Yeah, we have. We've had the likes of Phil Kay and Tony Lyle here recently as well. They're big acts in the UK. But, you know, I also have to look at the balance of things.
Of course.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, Sean Walsh has performed here. Carl Spain was here last month. Like, they are big names, but really in life, are any of us big names? You can be the biggest name and you're still only the biggest name in your field. You know, if I get an audience here of 85 people into this room to watch a gig and I put The Undertaker on stage, they're going to be like, who's that guy?
Yes.
Because they're comedy fans.
Yes.
Not wrestling fans.
I agree.
And do you know what? That goes for
everything. Yeah.
So you're better off not taking it too seriously, enjoying yourself and just reflecting where you are, and you gotta love the journey, not the destination. You gotta love the journey.
Well, I highly recommend people come out, because like I said, I've seen a show here, which I've seen you perform a couple of times as well. But one thing that I actually like in comedy, even on Netflix, for example, there's a new show on Netflix, I cannot remember the name of it, but it's like these little 30-minute shows of different comedians that you've never heard before.
Right.
And I love seeing it, because the guy that you think looks like an idiot, you go, oh, he's not going to be funny. It's the guy that's actually the funniest of the lot. And it's great because everyone, you know what kind of show you're going to get when you see your favourite comedians.
Yes.
So it is good to see new people that you've never heard of before.
Absolutely.
Because you just might get something out of it. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, just, I agree. I totally agree with you. And do you know what? For every established act that I put on the stage here, I put on 3 or 4 people in the same show that are undiscovered or emerging talent. Yeah. Or, you know, if you're into your comedy, you know they're good. But if you're not, you don't know who they are from Adam. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And putting those on the stage here and getting the audience leaving going, oh, that second guy.
Yeah.
Or your one that was on first in the second half. They were brilliant.
Yeah.
When you get that, the people that they didn't come to see, but they really enjoy them, then that, as a promoter, as a booker, you feel like you've accomplished.
It's much like going to a concert to see the main band and the support band.
Yeah.
Baffles you, you know, blows you away. Like it's, and it is, again, we can't speak highly enough of the venue as well, because it is a great venue.
Oh, I mean, listen, and it's not just about the physical space.
No, no.
The guys, the owners here, the management here, the staff here are all insanely supportive, and you know they know that I am so enthusiastic about comedy, but they share my enthusiasm now. It's like I've bred a new kind of family of like comedy buffs. They're into it because I'm into it, and they support me in everything I'm trying to achieve. And if I didn't have this venue backing me, then the journey would be much, much more difficult and probably less enjoyable because it would be more difficult. So, listen, it's not just about the shit that hangs on the walls. No. It's about the people who hangs it there.
Yeah.
And other people here are great.
Yeah, but it's all, but like, people remember, forget that. With every show and every spectacle that they go and see, there's really, really good hard workers that make that possible.
Yeah.
That never get mentioned.
Yeah.
Someone, we will give a quick 2 second shout out to is a hilarious man, Ross Brown, as well. That guy is killing it.
Yeah, like, on Ross his stuff. And Ross, you know, Ross has gone full time now. You know what I mean? Yeah. I still do comedy as a hobby. I still work, you know what
I
mean?
Yeah, of course.
But, you know, comedy is Ross's job. Mm-hmm. And look, Ross is my best mate. Like, you know what I mean? He's a great guy. He's very hardworking. He is insanely ambitious.
Yeah.
Insanely ambitious. He wants the world. And the moon and the fucking stars and the sun, that he wants it all, you know. Yeah. He wants to go for it all, and nothing he's prepared to put the work in. Nothing wrong with that. And his motivation has meant that he is able to focus on it full time and give it his all. And he's a very, I always laugh, even though I know all of Ross's jokes, I always laugh when I watch him perform, you know what I mean? So, you know, nothing but good things coming for Ross.
Yeah.
And he's worked hard enough to get them. So yeah, always a shout out for Ross.
Okay.
Always.
Cool. Well, but you being the we're nearly at the end of the show, so you being the comedy guy, you'll have heard that I do this little segment called Dynamo's Funny Stories.
Right.
I only bring it out for certain people.
Right.
Some people are just too, like, you know, I guess, uptight.
Yeah, yeah.
To have everyone do it. And sometimes nothing's happened during the week.
That's true.
That's funny.
Or it's just, don't forget that the news is always bad news.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
People tune in
to and I avoid that. You know what I mean?
So it's not often you get funny stories.
It's just America telling you that, you know, your life is going to end soon.
Ah, yeah.
You know.
Ah, yeah. Two madmen with nukes, yeah.
Yeah, so I avoid that.
You may as well go with a dancing squirrel or something like that.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I have one here during the old Ophelia, right? The headline was, a man ignores risk to life warning to go rollerblading during Hurricane Ophelia. And this was actually in Cork.
Well, the first worst of all, place. That was probably Ross to begin with, because Ross does have rollerblades.
Okay.
But if you, there's so much wrong with that. If you're a man who owns rollerblades,
well,
that in itself is enough for you.
Yeah, to be sectioned. Did it when we were 13. Like, yeah, you know.
So you shouldn't be a man with rollerblades unless you're Ross. But unless you wore the rollerblades into the sea, I don't see a huge problem with it. Do you know what? I'm doing a show in December here, and the core theme of the show is people will be offended by everything.
Yeah.
So there's a great meme online, and it's a guy who's trying to navigate his way through a load of laser beams.
Okay.
And the caption on it is, this is me trying to make an inoffensive joke in 2007. And the first comment underneath it is a guy who says, my wife was killed in a laser beam incident, you insensitive prick. And I'm like, well played. That's the day and age we live in. People get offended by everything. That the comments was better than the meme.
It's
so
true.
Somebody's going to be, oh, it's you know, I mean, it's offensive to rollerblades, it's offensive to storms and hurricanes.
Yeah,
and look, if that guy wasn't in the sea, and if nobody has to come and rescue him off his rollerblades, then more power to him.
Yeah.
It sounds funny.
I think it's funny, yeah, definitely, because it's like, there was a Cork football player that spotted him during the danger to life warning that had been put out. But he joked, people never fail to surprise me. But like you say, I think that's funnier than, as you said, having to have the Coast Guard come out and rescue
absolutely.
People.
Absolutely. And
being,
you know what?
Idiots.
That guy on rollerblades who's doing something a little different, he's going to have more supporters than Cork City are.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
You know what I mean? So whoever that player is can't be.
Well, their stadium is gone now as well. So like
blew away, did it?
Yeah, blew away. The roof fell down, I think.
Did it, yeah?
That's, I know that's not funny, but it's funny because no one got injured.
It's the only time they've blown the roof off the Cork City football stadium, you know what I mean?
Bray Wanderers is much better.
No, they're not. I think they're 10 times worse. The only thing I like out of Bray Wanderers is Rocky the Seagull. I like him.
He seems sound.
You know
what
I mean?
He's pretty cool.
Big fat head on. But everybody else, no.
Well, here's the second story, right? Yeah. This one might actually be funnier. These things are big now for some reason. Sex robot breaks on first public outing after being groped by a mob of people. So, I can tell you're intrigued.
Must have been Shane Kill.
So, she is not a fucking toy, the creator of an intelligent sex robot complained after a mob of men broke his creation for the second time. Scientist Dr. Sergi Santos took £3,000 worth, Samantha, on her first public outing at a retail park this weekend, despite her being left broken and heavily soiled after she was debuted at a tech fair.
That absolutely can't be true. That just sounds like that sounds like you were meant to be looking at news stories for your podcast and you just decided to go into the Pornhub tab and it was the beginning of a video online that you weren't meant to be watching.
Well,
I don't. If you're going to spend that much money, man, you can't point...
It's got to be real.
You can't point to a tabloid newspaper of that caliber and say this must be a true story. That is definitely not true.
But it definitely stood out. It definitely stood out.
No man in his right mind, scientist or not, is spending £3,000 on a real-life human being woman, okay?
Well,
let alone
true.
A robot woman, okay?
That's true.
So that definitely didn't happen. And
but
heavily soiled.
Heavily soiled.
They just heavily soiled it there and then. And
so
they couldn't contain themselves.
It's like a Comic-Con for a porn.
None of those robots look real. And I'm not even talking about sex robots. Robots in
general.
They all look creepy.
Yeah.
So I don't believe that there was this, that she was so attractive and expensive that she was like a magnet to all these horny men who just had to have her there and then on the spot.
Yeah.
That story's definitely made up.
And in fairness, if there was men that were going to do that to a robot, they should probably be locked up because that's obviously
absolutely.
Feelings that they're hiding towards real women.
And that's offensive to robots.
It is offensive to robots. But it's true. The doll, which reacts intelligently to touch and talks, had to be sent for repairs and cleaning after she was left filthy.
That's exactly like the girls down in the Coon nightclub.
Oh,
they have to be sent for repairs and cleaning.
I'm glad I don't live in Bray anymore. I take it you don't go to the Coon nightclub.
Of course I don't. I don't. I'm 34, man. I can't go to nightclubs now. I would become the creep.
Well,
when I was 18, 19, 20, there was always one middle-aged creep. And
you're
like, what the fuck is he doing here? Unless you are collecting your daughters when you're in
no
your 30s,
right to be there.
Don't be down there.
Or if you're a barman. Maybe.
Of course.
It's your job.
Yeah. Somebody has to mind them.
Yeah, there was always that one guy with the really bad hair that you could actually see the shape of his head through the amount of gel that he
had. Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? We can't be that guy anymore.
Don't have the hair for it.
No.
It's that age, man,
it's
you know what I mean?
I'm wearing a hat here because it's bad hair day pretty much every day, so. But,
better
no.
to have a bad hair day than a no hair day, you know?
Well,
I mean, that's when it gets worrying,
that's
you know?
I'd rather grey than have none at all.
Because
you can dye the grey if you want,
absolutely.
If it really bothers you.
Yeah.
Right, so I guess I'm going to come to just a few more little kind of questions, a few little ones that I'll throw out. We don't have to spend much time on them, and then we can wrap up. Right, what's your favourite match you've ever had?
Oh, wrestling-wise?
Yes, off the show.
I would go with two, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Fergal Devitt in the Moat Theatre in Kildare.
I
think
match.
It was, we We billed it as an Ironman match, but we were going to, for it was 30 minutes, yep. So I don't know what the half Ironman, a copper match maybe, I don't know. It was a tin man match. But we did a half an hour, and we got a chant for 5 more minutes at the end of it, because it was 1-1.
Yeah.
Really good match, really safe, really stiff.
I was there. Very good wrestling shorts.
He opened me up with chops. I busted his eye with a jab with a ton to the eye. So I'll claim that Fergal, just at that stage, showed me in a half an hour what his experience in Japan had done for his wrestling and how it took him on a level. So it was a fabulous match from his end.
From both of you, it was.
He did a delayed kind of jackhammer suplex at the end. And I remember when I was upside down just going, you know, how tired we both are. How is he holding me up like this? Because it was delayed. And he nailed it, you know, stiff and safe and perfect. So that match, and I'd say my match against Paddy Morrow for the belt.
Yeah.
Any match against Paddy Morrow.
Every match against Paddy. Yeah.
Has been a joy. And do you know what? I had a match recently at the Vodafone Comedy Carnival with Ross, was my tag partner. I was fighting Paul, who's one of my best mates.
Yeah.
Logan Bryce, who's one of the new guys coming through. Rubber Band, it says. And it just, for me, it's technically it's not a great match at all.
It was all fun.
But it was just so much fun.
That's what it's about.
I was just
isn't
surrounded
it?
By people I like and
yeah.
who I give a shit about. And it was just nice to be part of that.
Yeah.
And I've been lucky as well. OTT have involved me in their product on a few occasions, mostly as a stand-up, but that in that one occasion as a wrestler. And I was just thankful for it. So sometimes it's not about the how technically sound was. Sometimes it's about just how fun it is.
There's not a lot of things that are fun anymore. In life.
Yeah, well, that's it.
That's what it should be.
You take them while they're there, you know?
Do you know what I mean? All right, tell me... Who was some of your favourite up and coming comedians that we should look out for?
Oh God, in Ireland or
in general?
In general, God man, I don't know.
Something that you could recommend maybe that we should check out, you know?
I wouldn't say up and coming because this is a really really hard one. I'll tell you why. Because up and coming could mean that they've been working on it the last 10 years.
Sure.
And they're still undiscovered.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
So there's a wealth of people in this country that are, you know, not mainstream. I think Danny O'Brien is one of the hardest workers. And he's a Wicklow man. So I'm going to give Danny a shout out.
Okay.
Danny runs the Comedy Crunch, one of the best clubs in the country. He gigs everywhere. He's touring with Dermot and Dave at the moment on their live tour. He does support for them. He can sell out venues in his own right.
Mm-hmm.
He's packed the place out here, you know, in the festival and all. So Danny O'Brien, for me, is doing all the right things at all the right times. But, man, there's... Like, I literally see hundreds of comedians a year in this venue. So it's very hard to single
narrow
people out. Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
Paul Curry did the festival last year. Not up and coming, well established, but not an act that maybe everybody has heard of. I think you have to go see him. The likes of Fred Cook, you have to go see. Carl Spain's one of the funniest joke writers in the country. Al Porter, everybody knows who he is. Storm, obviously Ross, I'll always give a shout out to Ross. You know, Ross is working so, so hard, and he's got a show coming up in February as well, his second solo show down in Cork. Look, there's in Ireland, there's a lot of talent there. Do you know what? It's well we're having a look at the female comics that are coming through in Ireland, because a lot of them are very, very good and making good kind of ground.
Mm.
Niamh Maron and Lisa Casey, Joanne McNally are all doing really, really well for themselves as well. They're worth checking out. So it's one of those, I don't like naming an individual, but I always say, go and watch shows. Go watch live comedy.
Yeah, I get
and you'll find the one that's right for you. If I turn around, I just turned around and said Dara O'Brien as one of my favourite acts, there'd be people who just go, I hate him.
Don't
find him funny at all.
Sure,
So I actually think, do you know what? Go and see a comedy club and you'll see 4 or 5 acts and develop a love.
I guess, I suppose in my inexperience, you know, this is after all only the 11th show.
Yeah.
And usually I'm talking to wrestling guys, so it's always like, who's the up and comer? So I suppose a better way of wording that question was just some acts that people may never
heard of. And you know what? Most Irish acts there, and I could go on.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, because there's just fabulous talent in the country. But most of them are undiscovered.
Yeah, no, that's fair
enough.
That is
the truth of it. They are discovered if you're going to live shows and supporting live comedy. You'll know who they are. Chris Kent, I should have named. Chris Kent is a force from Cork. And Damo Clark, the Australian comedian who lives in Ireland and is based in Ireland. Like, they're all fabulous, fabulous acts that you just have to see live. But it's just about getting out and watching it.
Do you watch Game of Thrones? Did you watch Game of
Love
Thrones?
Love it.
Yeah.
Love it. Yeah. I'm brutal remembering all the guys' names.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, but
I love it. Like, it's what awesome, a show. Isn't it? Yeah, amazing.
I actually watched it all this year from first.
Yeah. I watched it a second time before the recent season came out, but
I didn't follow it for the longest time. I was out sick for about 2 weeks. I had a really, really bad flu.
Yeah.
And I literally didn't get up off the couch and watch that.
Oh, that'll make you better.
Incredible. Oh, it did.
Yeah.
It did. You're a fan of MMA as well?
Yeah. Absolutely.
What do you think of that scene now at the moment? Because it's kind of, like, I'm a huge, boxing is always my number one sport. But I'm not so deluded to know that MMA is overtaking it. And I think that's purely from a standpoint that it's one promoter. He can make whatever fight he wants to happen, so it happens. Whereas it's not like...
Yeah, UFC as a brand is stronger maybe than boxing, you know, a lot of boxing brands. You know what I mean?
But boxing's still huge.
Boxing's more lucrative. There's more money to be had in boxing because of that kind of old school mainstream appeal. I would think that most kids that are starting out in combat sports now will gravitate towards MMA than they will boxing. It's like one of those kind of things of, you know, a lot of people who support a premiership team, it gets passed down to them. Their dad supported, their older brothers, their uncles, their granddad, they all support the same team, so they take them on. But then you get the breed of people who just, you know, of young people now who just look at the superstars of football and they realise what teams they're at. And that's why you see spikes in certain clubs. Liverpool will always be a big club because people pass down generation to generation. But
like Chelsea with my dad, you know.
Yeah. So but in terms of their whether they are one of the big clubs anymore, you know, you would argue that, you know, the performances or the trophies don't suggest so, and I know I get torture from that.
No, Liverpool are shit.
But I'm a United supporter. But that is why they'll always be a big club in terms of support. But obviously, and I think MMA and boxing, there's a similarity there. You know, you will get granddads and dads and uncles and cousins and all who all did boxing. So you'll always have new kids trying boxing.
Oh yeah.
But I think there's an awful big surge in kids who just are exposed now to what MMA can be and what they can do in it. And I think
Conor McGregor kind of opens it up worldwide, not just in Ireland.
I think so. He played his part. But, you know, there's a whole history there, you know.
Oh, no, but that's what I mean. It's just now because, like, he's kind of taken...
He's mainstream.
He's taken the world of professional wrestling and made a character for himself he's brought into MMA and just brought it to a much bigger level. Big shout out. Obviously, Katie's fighting this weekend. Actually.
Yeah, she is. Yeah.
Her very own, going for her first world title. That will be something that she I'm nervous about.
She'll win it.
But she will win.
She will win it. And she will win. She's... I always have this argument with people as well. She's as big, if not a bigger... sports star than Conor McGregor. She may not have his money.
I agree.
She may not have that kind of swagger and all, but she has the titles. She has real, tangible, defended titles. You know, she's a world champion. She's an Olympic gold medalist. She's a European champion. And when I say world and European, I mean multiple times. So she's done it all. She has done it all. And now she will be a professional champion in her weight class
and Anthony Joshua is literally right behind her all the way. Like he absolutely loves her. I was just going to say as well, and this is no disrespect to Conor McGregor, because you know he's great, I love him, but I would much rather my kids growing up idolising Katie Taylor than Conor McGregor until they reach an age where they can listen to Conor McGregor. Whereas Katie,
He's got a bit of a foul mouth on him or whatever, you know what I mean? But look, that it's also a very violent sport that I would argue kids shouldn't watch. Boxing, period. You know, boxing maybe you can watch a bit more because
it's a bit more of a chess match, you know what I mean? No, but I would agree with that. I mean, when people go, Conor McGregor's foul mouth and blah, blah, but don't watch it then. Or don't listen to him.
Yeah, listen.
Again, people that hate you too.
It's going back to that offended mentality. People are offended by it and you're like, well, don't watch him or don't watch the sport. If you're offended by it, nobody is forcing you to. If somebody forces you to do something, you have a right to be offended. If you are not being forced and if you are actively going out to be offended, then don't, you know, take it to heart when people tell you to cop on and move on with your
life. I was going
to
say, it's like no one forces you to listen to you two, but they kind of did with the last album. So it's like, Bono, you kind
of... I love that picture of Bono at the... It was that guy, Jim will paint it. It's Bono dropping his album down people's chimneys at Christmas time. You know what I mean? I love that. You know?
I love it. It was a gift. That's all it was. If you don't want to listen to it, delete it.
Exactly.
But Look, I guess that's all we have time for today. Super, Adam. Yeah. I know you're a busy man, and thanks for taking
Good luck with your schedule, the podcast.
Thank you very much.
Grows and grows, and I hope you get more and more people on it. You know, spread it. I'm a big fan of anybody who tries to build something from scratch, build it from the ground up, and who supports other people and what other people are doing. So hopefully we'll have a volume to at some stage.
Oh, we definitely will. 100%. In fact, when I came out in January or February for the comedy stuff, we should actually...
Come watch a show, come meet a few comedians. And yeah. I'm always very conscious, you know, as a comedian, you're often asked, you're a comedian, tell us a joke. And we have this kind of, we have this kind of in thing in the business where you're like, if you're a heart surgeon, nobody asks you to prove it on the spot. But when you're a comedian, you're asked. And I'm always very conscious, when I do podcasts or radio interviews or whatever, unless I'm doing a funny spot, then I don't perform. I have these chats. Yeah. So you can listen to a comedian online and go, that wasn't overly funny. And you're like, well, this podcast isn't a funny podcast.
No, no.
But if you bring the podcast back out to a show,
yes,
you can record some of the jokes, some of the performance, and some raw post-performance interviews.
Yeah.
And you'll get a better sense of the fun side of it as well. This today was... It felt very businesslike, you know what I mean? It's nice to document.
That's it, you know what I mean?
What's going on and what
happened. The Lance Storm of podcasting.
It was lovely for me as a former wrestler to revisit the past and mark it, because as I say, there's a lot of good people, and I'm very happy to see those good people doing well for themselves in what is a growing Irish wrestling scene. I would prefer that they were all doing it professionally and that they were making money and getting a wage out of it and all. I would much prefer that for them, because do you know what? They deserve it.
Yeah.
But what they've built to this point has been phenomenal. Mm-hmm. There's enough talent in the country to sustain a very strong promotion, and you know, big props to Joe Caray for building an excellent product.
Absolutely.
Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
He's built the stage, he's given them the platform to shine on, and the really talented ones have got their moment to shine on.
And he's a good guy, Joe. Like, he's creating those opportunities for people there, even with the contender shows now, getting the young guys involved. So,
he's a clever man as well. He's built good brand, good merch, good platforms, a great stage, a great venue. He knows what he's doing.
He's a good guy.
He's clued in. And, you know, it's not just him that benefits. It's everyone. And, you know, more power to them. I wish it had been like that back in our day.
So do I.
But I'm also very grateful to being part of the journey we were part of, because you feel like when you look at the guys who were around you training at that time, when you see them doing so well, you kind of say, well, if we didn't go through what we did back then, they wouldn't be able to be where they are.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they are there because of us. They are there because of them and their hard work. But what I'm saying is I'm proud to have been part of their storyline.
Yeah.
And Jordan Devlin always says that if he ever gets his WWE 1 hour solo kind of documentary, he says he will dedicate 5 minutes of that 1 hour to how I tried to destroy his career, ruin his life, and torture his soul in those early days of giving him 12 gimmicks and being the only person who gave out about him doing flips. Now, and the other thing I'm going to do as well before we wrap up, I know we're very tight on
time, you're okay, yeah,
but the last thing I will do is, there's no way I could revisit the NWA Ireland days, and this is going back to, you know, listening to Justy's podcast as well, without acknowledging the role that Paul Bean played in Irish wrestling.
Yeah, you probably heard us saying that.
And I wish that Paul had have seen what Irish wrestling had become. But do you know what? That guy, when you talk about laying foundations, that guy, without him, we wouldn't have done a hell of a lot of the things that we did, both
literally
in that gym, over the shows and all. And do you know what? I don't want to be sounding too, putting a glum spin on it. You know what I mean? It's obviously something that we all live with, and it's sad what happened. But being at the same token, like, he was one of the great, great guys, and he got an awful lot of torture off us. My Jesus, did we give him a hard time.
Oh, yes.
I kind of feel a little lost that, all the torture I used to give to Jordan, I always had Bean back in me, you know what I mean? You know, it was me and Bean and Pete and that I used to give, you know, Jordan and some of the lads, an awful ribbon and all the rest of it. So I hope that Jordan mentions him as well.
I couldn't
not do the podcast and say that.
I love the guy, even though I was on his hate list. But the hate list changed.
The hate list changed.
But as Paul Tracy said, and I said on the last episode, if you were on his hate list, that's meant that you gave a shit.
Yeah,
in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
If you didn't acknowledge your existence at all, then just thought you were a thundering cunt. So
he was a great man. You know what I mean? So when we gloss over Irish wrestling, past, present, future, you can't not mention Bain.
Well, wherever he is, he's smiling and proud of the work.
No, he's not. He's fucking giving out about everybody. Probably. He's giving out about this meeting here.
Yeah, what the fuck are those two talking about?
Exactly.
Like, idiots, grow up. Yeah. Like.
That's it. You know what I mean?
Well, listen, on that, Adam, thank you again.
It gives
me enough time to actually mention next week's guest, which you might be interested in. It's a former Chelsea football player, believe it or not.
Well, then I'm not interested. You lost me already.
From the 1980s. He was the first. It's actually a really interesting story. He wrote a best-selling book about this. His name is Paul Canneville. My dad and your dad and all might remember him as well. He was the first black player ever to play for Chelsea in a time in the 80s when racism was rampant.
Yeah.
His book is, like, off the charts.
Yeah.
When he retired, he had an addiction with drugs. He got cancer. He had a really tough life. But his story is to tell. So, like, regardless of whether it's a Chelsea player or not, it's a really interesting story for people.
I hate Chelsea.
Yeah. I know you do. I hate them.
I hate them worse than Man City. Yeah. And worse than Liverpool. I will listen to his podcast.
You will,
because
to his
stories sound, you know, he's been through the mill.
Yeah.
But I wish you and every Chelsea supporter nothing but hardship, heartbreak.
Yeah.
For the future, I hope he's never win another trophy.
I don't take it personally, but I wish you the same, because Mourinho was a thundering cunt.
Well, listen,
so there you go.
But now he's our thundering cunt.
Exactly. He's allowed to park the bus now that he's with you guys.
He absolutely is, but not with anyone else.
I
wish you a lifetime of misery, and I extend that to City and Liverpool fans, but mostly Chelsea fans.
Okay, that's
fine. Because I just can't.
Well, I know you don't mean that for me personally. You just mean from my sporting aspects, in terms of when I watch Chelsea, you want nothing but misery for my
day. Nothing but misery.
And I'm a very, very nice person when Chelsea lose as well, as you can see from my social media. I hate it. But I'm giving up on football, so there we go.
Yeah.
But next week, I'm going to interview Paul Canneville. And a little one for you as well. Foreign will be on the show soon as well.
Oh, very good, yeah.
That's going to be interesting.
Absolutely great guy. Yeah. I did a gig with him recently at Fitzpatrick Castle Hotel. Very, very funny guy. Very down to earth and continued success. Such a talented guy. So
it's great.
You'll have a great one there.
You should set
up a few interviews with him, with various personalities.
Sell
them as real.
I've got something up my sleeve on that one there. I'm not going to give it away, but there's a couple of ideas there that, put it this way, Adam Abbs, the character, and the Suicide Machine and all these guys that we grew up with might be getting some words from Al Foran's various different
characters.
So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, but he's a top bloke.
Yeah, so that's what's coming up. And Adam, again, if you want to just mention before we go the shows that you have coming up.
Oh yeah, we have a November show with Jack Wise. I think that's on the 16th or 17th. It's the Thursday of that week,
whatever it is. Yeah.
And then the 6th of December, I think it is my own kind of Christmas show.
Yep.
Where I'll kind of close off the show myself. The festival will be back in February 14th to 18th.
Awesome.
And top Irish names, top UK names coming over for that. So that'll be a hoot. But Hardy Hair Comedy Club on Facebook.
Yeah,
that's the best place to keep up to speed with everything.
Well, I'll be mentioning on the podcast when they do come up, because that's something I like to do weekly now, is support, you know, all the likes of the local wrestling and your own stuff now with the comedy. Yeah. So I got to do my research. I like it. I love it. Listen, Adam, been a pleasure.
Yeah,
had an absolute blast, and we're definitely going to have you on again.
Lovely.
See you in February, my friend.
Thanks, Chief.
Cheers, buddy.